Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Deeney.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graham Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. So do please go to patreon.com/Graham Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you.
Hello everyone, welcome to another big interview with me, Graham Hunter. Our guest for the next two shows was genuinely a remarkable footballer, one of the best that Europe's produced in the last 40 or 50 years. You don't get to play for Juventus, Barcelona and Madrid if you're not. So you're going to love listening to Michael Laudrup, as I did when we met in person, thank goodness. We love you, Zoom, you've been great during the crisis, but one-on-one is good. Hello, John Hall and Daryl Oates. We met in Barcelona when Michael was in town for work. It was a Champions League week. This is part one, where I decided to do with Michael what we've done in only one or two of the 120 or so interviews in the series. I reckoned he was the kind of person who, all these years after he stopped playing, might still be able to get into minute detail about how he played, what made him special, what his plan was when he received the football. If you've been with us since the Chris Waddle episode, which I guess was one of our first four or five, you'll know the idea. So, listeners, it seems I was right. The result of asking him about his ability, asking him about how he treated the ball, how he treated rivals, is one of my favourite interviews. I genuinely hope you'll feel the same. Enjoy part one of Michael Laudrup on The Big Interview. Today, on one of the projects that makes me happiest in my life, The Big Interview, I'm going to spoil the surprise. We have Michael Laudrup, a man who makes, who made and makes football beautiful, and who won a lot of things, and who's very talented. But the thing that unites everybody that listens to this podcast is we appreciate football intelligence. We appreciate football beauty. So first of all, welcome back to the city that you lit up, because we're in Barcelona, so welcome back. Bienvenido, we can say.
Thank you, gracias.
Bienvenidos. But it's also, Michael, the first time I've spoken to a white knight in this podcast series. It's about 20 years ago since Denmark made you a white knight. I think that's a really beautiful name. I think it's a beautiful title. Just to explain a little, remember, I come from, although I'm a Scottish guy and maybe I'm a little bit more of a Republican guy than a monarchy guy, my dad met Prince Philip and played cello for him, and I'm interested in, and we all watched the Danish season, is it called Borga?
Borgen,
which was sensational. Maybe it was a false picture.
It's a little of the castle where the, yeah, of course, where the
So what was your day in the castle, and what made you a white knight, and what was it like?
Well, I don't want to spoil your enthusiasm, but of course it's always fantastic when you get a nominee like that, and we walk up and to the castle there, wait in line, and then after receiving this, we had to go and talk to the queen and say hi to the queen. And I was a little, when I saw her, she was sitting there, because I was not number one or two. I don't know what number I was in line, but it's something special. But really that day, we came in, I received that, and then I went home. You know, I'm a little like that. I'm very pleased, I'm honored, but then again, I don't put so much into it.
I knew you wouldn't be carried away by it, and I knew it wouldn't change the person you are.
No.
But when the country, when the state says you are one of a very small number of people and it's our highest honor, like in the UK, the Queen or Prince Philip or Prince Charles, they will take a sword and they'll touch you on each shoulder with the sword.
No, they did not do
no
that.
No swords in
Denmark. I received like... a small, I don't know what you call it.
A little white cross?
Yeah, a little white cross, but I cannot wear it. I can only wear it if I go to when I go to a place where the Queen is in special occasions, and so I have it in a safe at home, and it's lying there.
I'm still glad I asked, because I like the customs of other countries, and also for anybody who hasn't heard you speak before, I knew that when we talked about the highest order Denmark can give and meeting the Queen, Michael Ludwig would say, I'm honoured, it's nice, but I'm not so impressed, because you're a guy with feet on the ground. I'm going to try number two. In all the 110 interviews we've done, I have to be honest, with respect to all the other guests, we've never had people speak like they do when they send us in questions. We have socios.
Yeah.
Let me give you an example, please. I'm sorry to embarrass you. I'm sorry about this, but Chris Hennigan believes what he writes. Hi, Graham. Firstly, what an elegant, beautiful footballer Michael was. For a certain vintage of people, the Danish team at Mexico 86 are like a red and white and black crosswind, zigzagging in and out of our memories in that beautiful kit. Shane Hurley says, first off, Graham, please say thank you to this wonderful, wonderful footballer. Even after he crossed the El Clásico divide, Michael still has a part in my heart from being part of Barcelona's first European Cup winning team. It just goes on and on and on. What do you think was the part of your football game, never mind the trophies, that made people so bewitched by you? What was the things you did that you can understand that made people say, that made people still say, wow, Michael Laudrup?
Yeah, now you forced me to talk about myself and what I was... I think of all the talks I had with people during many years, I think a lot of things coming up one after another is that they say doing things, difficult things, looks easy, you know, and I think the vision I had on the pitch, but it wasn't something that I had when I was 20. I think it's something that I developed maybe when I was in my early 20s, when I was in the European Championship in 84 with Denmark, with the 86 in Mexico, the World Cup. I was still only 20 and 22. I was maybe a little different, maybe more direct, and then I added that to my play with my vision, and that's maybe a little difficult to explain to people, but I was always orientated what happened on the right, on the left, and even sometimes behind, and that people, when my peer, especially here in Spain, those years with Barcelona, 5 years, and then with Madrid, is that vision that I had for the others. How can you see that space who wasn't there? I think combined with my individual skills, I think in maybe in one against one.
Every player is different. We understand this, but mentally, if somebody said to me, "Well, I never saw Michael play. Explain him a little bit," I'd begin to make comparisons with Chris Waddle, Zinedine Zidane, Valeron. I'm not saying, you know, which, well, maybe Valeron wasn't your level, but you're united by being of a, you're quite a strong, athletic man, reasonably tall for a guy who could dribble so well.
Yeah, actually, that's, now you're saying it, it's something that lots of people, they told me when they met me in person, said, "Oh, Michael, you're actually quite high, because I'm 183. And because on telly I look a little smaller, you know, because I have short legs. And no, but actually this is the same with my brother Brian, and he's 185. So this is really a tall guy. But because we have that smaller legs, so we can move make change of direction very fast. And even if we were not something that you're more used to with players on, yeah, Messi, Maradona, 160 something, Alan Simonsen, Danish player as well. But we actually that higher. But that's something that has surprised a lot of people. Said, "Well, you guys, you're actually quite tall."
You see, watching you, if I can narrow the comparison down with Zidane and Chris Waddle, two great footballers who lifted your heart, but also when you watch them, you were like, how have they done that? And you shared something with them whereby, and I'm asking you, how much was just in your DNA, in your brain, and how much did you learn? So in this series, when we spoke to Chris Waddle, we thought, if we ask him, "Chris, how did you do what you do?" Some athletes can do it, but they can't describe it. And Chris went, he talked about his balance and how close he might get to a rival before he starts showing one way or twice this way. Because one image that will always be with me is you going, "Do you want it?" and then disappearing, just an acceleration into a space with the ball. How much did you plan that? How much was natural? How much just became, "I know I can do this, and I'll switch into top gear now"?
No, I can say one thing. It's one thing, especially in Spain, you will know it because you've been here for many years. I said, Michael, he made the croqueta. That means using the ball from one foot to the other one to push it forward. And that I used, that was something natural, because I think that I can make the dribble and I push, like in billiard or something, I push it from my right to my left. And then when the ball goes, I push that forward. So immediately I'm in the move with the ball. So I use it as a movement to get forward, to get past my opponent, but in the same moment to get forward. Because one thing is to, in one against one, to make the dribble, but if you stay there, the opponent will be there, will still be there. So I use that, and then I've seen that other players who then used it. Well, Iniesta has been fantastic with this one, but also other players younger than me, they have used that to get forward. And sometimes even players who are not fast, when they do it fast, they actually look fast. And I think Iniesta is a great example. He was not a very fast player, but he looked fast because he was a fast thinker. Zinedine Zidane is another one that you are saying. So, but it came natural. Like other things, I think I did it two very famous things in Spain, one with Romario and the other one with Raul, and then I made a third one with the World Cup in 98 where it just lifted it over. And I was asked, why did you do that? How did you train that? I said, no, but there was no space on the ground because there were so many defenders there. So the only way I could get the pass through was to put it on top of the players, and it came like that.
Did you, well, you've got a good mind in life and in football. Just having a sharp, intelligent mind match with peripheral vision, which you talked about, and skills, this will give
you
this.
Again, that was, I have to admit, I did not have that at that level when I was young. That just to say that you have to have the basics to do the things. technically and all that, but then you have to develop them. And even if you see maybe as you see Messi, which is one of the best three players in the world of all time, when you see him when he was 20, he had that one against one, one against two, one against four, fantastic. But he, 9 out of 10, he went to finish it by himself. Suddenly, from 1 year to another, he started to add that with his vision. With Dani Alves, then with Jordi Alba, with other players, with Xavi, with Iniesta, suddenly he made the pass of goal, and then it became impossible to stop him, because in the beginning, when he was young, he had that, but the opponent, they knew, well, when Messi takes the ball, he will go to finish it himself. And suddenly he changes, so he goes by himself, or sometimes he makes the pass. And from that moment, he became, yeah, the best.
I wonder, I think, and I'm not...
Because when you add something, and I just wanted to talk about Messi, because here we're talking about the best, but even the best, when they have to develop parts of their job, or play the part of their skill, with time, you know.
Sometimes you develop in the example you make about yourself, between maybe playing European Cup football in 1981 in Ireland and in Romania, to the guy who at one stage can be considered the best player in the world. You're talking about Messi, who comes through with a natural explosive talent, but then becomes so complete, so intelligent.
Yeah,
that's a transition. I wonder if you, because we can't speak for Messi, but I wonder if one of the things, apart from experience and maybe good teachers, did you begin to find that because your first touch was good, because you had croquetas and a vision of space, did you begin to find that you could make good decisions about what to do because you had that little bit more time than the players facing you, because you could do special things? Because it looked like, they call it here pausa, the idea that you can do things when everybody else is crazy speed, but you're like, I know, I have time to think about a lob. I have time to think about where space is.
But
part of it?
Yeah, but a part of that transition also comes with the then with the players you play with. Because when I played in Italy, I was young. I was already in the national team. I had the quality I had. But then I came here when I was 24. And suddenly I play completely different football with a team who's keeping the ball, who's not losing ball, who's playing like we did here, like did in Spain at that time, but Barcelona was the first with the Johan Cruyff. And suddenly it's also give, like you say, the pause for that rest in the game where the team is moving the ball, and you have to find your position, and then they know exactly, now we have to give it to him. And what I had to do, that was new for me, because I came from the Italian football, and also from, I was younger, was much more intense than the Serie A in the beginning of the 80s and the mid 80s, and it was a different football, and then suddenly I come here, and it's a completely different way of playing with Cruyff.
What would you categorise that you left behind from Lazio and Juve? What would you categorise the difference in the mentality you found in Serie A?
It was much more tactically, and in the end of the 80s with Sacchi in Milan, then suddenly you had an Italian team as well who kept the ball. And I remember when my last 2 years in Juventus, and we played Milan, and sometimes we lost, we drew, and we won. But every time we played them, you had a feeling after the game, they had the ball the whole time.
Wow.
Then in the end, you can win 1-0, or you can have 1-1, or whatever. But they had that impression. They had a fantastic team, but it was. We also had a good team in Juventus, but it was different. And suddenly you play an Italian team who kept the ball. And then I come to Barcelona with Cruyff, and then suddenly we start to play not completely like the Milan of Sacchi, because they had a lot of with pressing and all that, and but we did not have that in the dream team. That was something who came Barcelona with, yeah. I think, especially with Guardiola.
Yes,
with that pressing as well. We did not have that with our team here in Barca, and don't have it in Madrid either. But we had that to keep the ball, and that gives you I think it's obvious if during 90 minutes you only have one ball on the pitch, if you have the ball 60 minutes, and every player, I don't know the statistic, but every player, the maximum, what is it, 3 minutes you can have the ball.
Touch the ball.
So you really have to do well in those 3 minutes. But if you have it 60, there are more chances that I can get the ball in the right areas so I can do my play. And that was what happened here when I came to Spain first especially with the Cruyff Barcelona, that it was a different kind of play who gave me the possibility to make that transition for what I already had of quality to add something new.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Conor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
What kind of teacher was he? Because, like, he even from the first time I ever saw him, which was in the early 70s on television in Ajax playing, we didn't get much televised football. We're similar ages, although you look a little bit younger, unfortunately. But nonetheless, we watched similar things. I mean, you didn't get a lot of European football on your television.
No.
So when the European final comes on and it's Ajax Panathinaikos or Ajax Inter or whatever, I saw this flipping ballet dancer on the screen, moving differently, looking differently, elegant but also imperious. So it struck me, right? But also I met him a lot, so I'm not stupid about him. He could be brash, he could be rude, he could be short of patience, but around him, he was a genius in sporting terms. He was a genius. Around him, special things happened. What was he like as a teacher? Was he always patient with you? Was it learn because I tell you? Did he take you individually?
No, there was a lot of things. All the things you say, Cruyff was a personality. You can say that's another
that's a
way.
Euphemism.
That's with everything and his Dutch.
Yeah, there's another factor
from Amsterdam. So no, but if I have to take one thing out, you say okay, we can talk about Johan Cruyff for 1 hour, 2 hours. But if I have to pick one thing out, which is different from all the other managers, coaches I've had in my whole career, it was that he could take things and then simplify them and say, we have to do this. And then you can ask, why? Because I come from Northern Europe. We sometimes, especially Denmark, we ask why when people say something. You know? And he said, because of this and this and that. And then you said, yeah, That's obvious. So he said things, football terms, tactical things, technical things, where you say, yeah, that makes sense. But I never heard that from other coaches. We have to play like this, we have to play like this, we have to play like this, but never they never told what, why. I have some coaches who told us, the team, how we had to do when we're defending, you go there, you blah, blah, blah. But when we have the ball, then you know what to do. But he gave us some things. Of course, you cannot teach a player when you get the ball, you have to play it to him, or you have to do one against one against two. No, it was not that. But he gave some things that when he said them and explained them, and he was very, not using 2 minutes to think, 10 seconds, 15 seconds, we're doing because of that. You said, yeah, of course. And that simplifies football, because football is a very simple game, but it's also at the same time a very difficult one. It's simple because there are no rules. Yeah, the offside rule, you have to explain people what the offside is about, but the rest is, you cannot kick people and you have to score more goals than the other one. That's the simple part. Then all the other things about how to move, how to make the movement adjustment in the team, offensive, defensive, transition during a game, that makes it a little more complicated. But overall, so it's, at the same time, it's a very simple and easy game, and on the other hand, it's also very complicated.
Picasso once told me, painting is easy. You have a brush, you have paint, you have white paper, but then what you do on it?
Exactly. But it's also, that's why everybody talks about football. Because if we start talking about some sports, hockey, basket, cricket, rugby, a lot of rules. And you don't want to make a fool out of yourself, starting say, why did he not do that? Or, so of course he cannot do that, because the rule says otherwise. You know, you don't have that in football.
You
can say everything, even if you don't know so much about football. You're allowed to say anything, because, yeah, everybody can play football.
I'm beginning to believe you once had a conversation with someone in Britain about cricket. That's what I'm working back to.
I don't know anything about cricket, because I don't know all the rules. But you can take a lot of other sports as well, and they are a little more complicated in itself. But football is, yeah, a part of the offside that you have to explain. It's easy.
I would never go away from Johan Cruyff quickly, but you gave me an assist pass, because I want to ask you a difficult question about Danes and Denmark. You mentioned Simonsen. Not everybody, because of the age we are, not every young listener is going to remember he was Danish Golden Ball winner. Yeah. Denmark has a small population. It's a relatively small country. They won the European Championship. You won the Confederations Cup. Peter Schmeichel, big hero for the treble for Manchester United. Yeah. Michael Laudrup, still maybe one of the most cherished dream team players. We can go on about whether it's Arnesen or Elkjær, or when Leicester provide a miracle, there's a Schmeichel in goal, etc., etc. When I sat once in Copenhagen and interviewed Peter Schmeichel, another character, for good, and you know, he's controversial.
Oh, you're talking about Cruyff and now about Peter Schmeichel.
There's
personalities,
there's characters of character, for sure.
No, because those words, it takes all, because you cannot, again, like we talked about before the interview started, if you talk about, no, his good things is this and his bad is this, and then you have some people, they want to, he said two bad things about this one, we take them. No, but we forget that he said five very good things. Yeah. So let's just call them characters, the and world personalities.
Thank you, we'll do that. The world is going crazy, but Peter said something that interested me, because I was asking him too about exactly what you said about saying to Johan, well, why, or explain that. So I said to him, what was it about the Danish character, about the personality, the way in which Denmark has become, in sporting terms, a real reference point in my lifetime? And he said, I mean, remember, people must remember listening, that as you were coming through, Denmark had only just stopped being amateur in football, so the gap from to now is real small in football terms. And Denmark has achieved a lot.
Before 84, in European Championship 84, we did not do anything for, I don't know, because in the 60s and the 50s, it was when you get the players in Denmark, they got professional. You could not play in the national team. that
they wouldn't allow them.
No, they would not allow them. Only for amateurs. So then in the 70s, it came back. But of course, then you have to develop again a structure and a team. So
this is what your father went through this.
Exactly.
Because your father was a fantastic player.
Yeah, he went to Austria, and when he went there, they said, no, then you cannot play in the national team. Then I think it was in 70 or 69, they allowed professional footballers to come back to play with the national team. You know what? Which team, which country they picked for the first game to play against?
I hope it's Scotland.
Portugal with Eusebio.
Oops.
5-0. And of course, the next day, the headlines, what? It's better to play with the amateurs. Why should we allow the professionals to come back and play in the national team when they lose 5-0 to Portugal?
Why was there a society feeling about the gloriousness of amateurs?
Well, I don't know. But I still remember that in the Danish league, I think it was in the late 70s, that the players started to earn very small amounts of money to play in the best league in Denmark. I think, well, I played in KB Copenhagen in Brøndby in from 81 to 83, 1.5 years before I went to Lazio, and it was very very small amounts. But that was just in the beginning of professional football in Denmark. So actually, it was incredible that already in 84, because we had so many professional players, that we had that generation of, yeah, Simonsen, Elkjær, Morten Olsen, Laird Bjarnason, Bergen.
Coming around the corner, Molbu.
Jesper Olsen. That was one generation. But that was one generation of players who just played, some of them amateurs, a little professional football, 1 or 2 years, and then going out. And then suddenly we have in 84 and 86 that generation in the national team. So it was a little strange against all odds that so early in the 80s that we already had that generation of players.
Of pure gold. This can't answer that question, but the reason I mentioned Peter was that he talked about, in terms of Danish character, inquisitiveness, intelligence, curiosity about life, open-mindedness. He talked about the school system, and he said the school system was peculiar in European terms. It was different in terms of what you do at what age. It was a system that taught you to speak, that taught you to have a point of view. Mm. Rather than forcing learning on you, it said, challenge the world.
No, but
you recognize this?
I said before, Danes, we ask, we have a little, in Denmark, it's I don't know if it's a joke, but it's a little, you say, if you take two Danish players, you have two Danish players in the team, two Swedish and two Norwegian, and as a coach you say, now, in between you, they're professional players, all six, just pass the ball. Yeah? One to another. The Swedish, they will do it without saying. The Norwegian, probably as well. And the Danes will say, why? They want to. Why? So that's, yeah, a little in consequence of what you're saying now. It's yeah, ask you, even if sometimes, yeah, to get a little more knowledge or what, or just to be curious. Sometimes it's always just to be good.
The school system does demand that, or did in your generation?
No, I don't know if they demand that. So many years ago, I've been to school, but it's true. It's we are all different, and even in the north of in Scandinavia, there's a difference between the Danes, the Swedes, and Norwegian in culture. But again, then it depends also. Even in our country, if you come from one part of the country and the other part, we all have our culture from we were kids. You know, it's if you come from a big city, a smaller city. So you also have to be very careful not to generalize too much.
No.
Because I think we can take every country. You take Scotland and you say, okay, there's also a difference if you come from Glasgow or you come from...
Yeah, there is. But if you generalize and you say, if you put the two...
But now I generalize.
The two footballers from Scotland will self-destruct. They'll be talented. They'll be funny. Everybody will like them and they'll self-destruct. And that won't be a false...
They will definitely be funny because that's...
Usually.
That's my view of...
Nobody's ever accused me of being funny, but my countrymen are.
My uncle was, you know, he was the manager, you know.
Aberdeen, my team, exactly.
Yeah, of course.
A big character. Yeah. Sadly lost now, what a footballing family you come from.
Yeah.
But we have beautiful sponsors. Bet365 asked me to ask you. This is a simpler, maybe more encapsulated. Maybe it's difficult for you. I don't know. What trophy or award are you most proud of from your career as a player or manager?
The first European... Well, it was just before the season before it became Champions League. But so people, younger people, they can understand. I won the first Champions League of Barcelona, so this is big. Won five consecutive leagues, league titles here for Barcelona. One with Madrid. I won titles with Brøndby in Denmark. But I still think that being a smaller team, I always said, and I would like to confirm that here, trophies won as a manager is giving me more pleasure than as a player, because I know it's much more work being a manager than being a player. Because as a player, if we can simplify it a little, you have to think about yourself. Yes, your teammates, who will be playing, who will I play against, who will be my direct opponent tonight, blah, blah, blah. But the manager, who is playing, who is not playing, the president, the staff, the board, the media, everything you have. So when you achieve big things as a manager, so I don't know, but maybe, just maybe, the league, the cup title with Swansea was the biggest one. Also because it was the first one, like it was the first Champions League here with Barcelona. When you win the first trophy of a club, it's a club or whatever country, whatever, it's huge, because you know how important it is for a lot of people. And as I recall, this is the only trophy that Swansea ever won, and who knows when they will win the next one. It could take 2 years, 20 or 30 or 50, you know, you never know. You have to. So maybe, just maybe, I will go for that one.
It's a beautiful assist.
Even if a League Cup compared to a Champions League, obviously you cannot do that. But
I think people can understand that, although they haven't experienced it, the difference between being a superb player in a good team and being a manager, because managing drives you crazy. Players are like, it's like sometimes trying to herd wild dogs or forgetful sheep. It's Swansea, your resources are smaller. Now, that season, you go to Liverpool. You don't just win, you win 3-1. Liverpool's side includes Carragher, Joe Cole, Jordan Henderson still there. You know, it's Steven Gerrard comes off the bench, Luis Suarez comes off the bench. Michael, you were managing a team with Gerhard Trimmel, Chico, who was brought from the Cantera.
I think actually that competition... This is not the biggest thing. I think to win at Anfield against Liverpool was fantastic. But to win a semi-final
over two games
against Chelsea,
yes,
with their best team, with Hazard and company, I think that was impressive.
So tell us the story of how you planned it. Because the first leg, Michu, not the same legend as you at Swansea, but near, very near. Michu and Danny Graham score in London. You win away. Do you remember about how, in any way, you planned to unpick Rafa Benitez's Chelsea? What was the key, not just the performance on the night, the key to understanding how Swansea wins that?
No, the key was that we're playing away, and we think, yeah, I was telling, this is two games, two leg. So we have to think about, try to get a goal, but we also have to defend. So it's that we have to think. It's not only tonight. We have a second leg at home, and of course, we knew defensively we had to be well organized. But we also always you have to think about when you get the ball what to do. You don't have to be naive when you play teams better than you. You have to be very well organized defensively, but you always need to have solutions when you get the ball. Otherwise, you stand inside the box, your own, and it's only a question of time before they score. And those two games, they did not score in 180 minutes.
I'm hearing Johan Cruyff's simplicity of instructions, but clarity in what you said.
And
there.
Then, of course, you know, even you can do all the things before and you can plan it well. And you know also when you play teams that are better than you, you know there will be periods during the game, moments, where you have to suffer. You have to know also how to suffer.
Define that
It can
word.
Be...
That,
suffer that is when you feel, as a team, we want to go forward, but every time we get the ball, they go to put us under pressure, and we try to hit it along for our striker or one or two, and back it comes. And 5 seconds later, they're back again, and they just... And you have to...
What's the key to coping with that? Because it's a word that gets used in Spain a lot, sofrimiento. It doesn't get used in
those,
so much.
In those moments, it's difficult to explain because also the attacking team, they are on top of the game. It can be 5 minutes, it can be 10, it can be 15. But they're never on top the whole game. It's very rare. So you have to go through those 5-10 minutes. Maybe you have to take a pause when the ball goes out. You have to try to push forward. You need that one or two players, they suddenly, when they get the ball, when they go past their direct opponent, so you feel like as a team, now we're coming back into the game. Oof, we had suffered for 6 minutes. It seemed like it'd been 26, not 6 minutes, but they've had six crosses, they have five corners, they have three shots on target. How do we get past this period? And those, there will be moments like that. And again, especially when you play against teams like better than you. And definitely this Chelsea team was a very good one.
Psychologically for you and the squad, is it an unusual thing when, you know, you're 2-0 up from London and all over the media, maybe the fans, done. And they're coming down the road to Swansea. And Rafa changes the team and makes sure that the whole artillery is there.
Of course.
The psychology of the second game, which ends 0-0, is very different. It can't no fiesta. Also, don't be relaxed.
Well, because the problem is a lot of people said, we won 2-0 up there. Now, we just draw here, we're in the final. Yeah, it's just. It will be 90 minutes because if they score the first one after 10 minutes, I mean... This team, they can easily score 3 goals, and then you have to score 2, you know, because 3-1 at home, then you're out. So it was the second one was really, really even tougher than the first one. I remember. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Backpage. Our music is by Beard Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.